and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 407. I am Lisa Sheps, along with Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We are, what else am I going to say? Oh, you're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. Also streaming live, as usual, at KOOP.org. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Someone in April. It is Wednesday, April something. What date is it? April 5th. I have March 22nd, 2017. On the show today, we have Zach Theater and Lady Day at the Emerson's Bar and, at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Also, Austin Playhouse will be here a little later talking about Sense and Sensibilities. And of course, we will have lots of interesting talk about the world of theater in Austin, Boston, where you get lost in, Chicago, New York. We'll be right back.
One morning in April.
Okay, I admit it. I am a dork.
But a really, really sweet,
awesome dork one. My most favorite dork in the world.
All right. Well, I have got to take this time to give a huge shout out to Miss Nicole Shiro.
I was all by myself last week.
All by herself last
week. On the board, no people to play with.
Fortunately, one of her guests was one of our regular co-hosts.
Thank God that Bob Tolero.
So Bob Tolero was there, but you did such a fantastic job. I listened to the whole show.
It was hard to talk about some of the news items last week I wanted to talk about were things that I wanted to talk about with you.
You should have just, went for it, but I one of the little tidbits during backstage at Offstage was the fact that Bob Tolero was a monk.
Okay, did you
Bob Tolero,
yes.
A monk.
Did you know this? I made Bob Tolero tell us something about himself that none of us knew, and I was like, wait, come again?
Yep.
Wow.
Monk.
I bet he'd look great in the outfit.
Totally, right?
It would. He'd be a perfect monk.
Yeah, good in orange.
Good.
Okay. Maybe exactly. He'll quit that orange theater and go right back to being a monk.
Oh, Lord.
Yep. So let me introduce the folks that are here with us. We have Michael Rader.
Hello.
I wish we had the camera going today, because that was funny.
That was a very good radio voice. Thank you.
I'm thrilled to be here.
We have Jess Hughes.
Hi.
And we have Marie Falgren.
Hello.
Hey, so we have a very manageable group today, which
it
is great.
It is.
Yeah, we haven't had this in a while. It's
no,
kind
we
of
haven't.
Exciting.
And you know, mostly a sitting down group, which is good.
Okay.
It gives it that living room feel that
it does.
Don't get
fireside
very often.
Chat.
No, we're a little more classy today.
It's more classy. I want to do a shout out to Mr. Kim Simpson. He did another wonderful job today.
Kim rocks it.
I was listening to the show earlier in his show, and just some rocking. I don't know who it was, but this woman singing in Spanish. It was just amazing, amazeballs. Reminding me it's just amazing. Just amazing. So I want to get to some of this stuff right now because I've got stuff I want to talk about.
What is that stuff?
What kind of stuff?
Well, we had a couple of openings.
Fun stuff, bad stuff, crazy stuff, good stuff.
All the above.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring it down a little later.
Okay.
I'm going to get real. I'm going to make it 100. Make it 100? Bring it to 100? What did he say? I don't know.
You're going to just do something bigly.
I'm going to be 100. It's going to be 100. We're going to make
it
100.
It's going to be big.
So, Amelie, with Philippa Sue opened to not so great notices.
Yeah, it was.
All around.
Yeah.
Anybody see it?
Nope.
Yes, I flew last night. I saw it.
Well, Michael, you live
around.
In New York. Do you live
I
in
do.
New York? So, you could have flown home and saw it.
I've heard a lot of things about the show.
Yeah.
From friends who were there.
Who are there?
Oh, that were there.
That have been there.
Did you read the reviews and or what they say?
I
did. Do they match up with the reviews?
They match up with the reviews.
They weren't hateful reviews. They were just lackluster.
No, they weren't hateful. It was just it gave it a sort of like milquetoast. Like that didn't.
Womp womp.
It didn't do.
It was nothing. There was nothing.
It was a little bit of a cipher review.
And even Philippa Sue, who I wanted to get really good reviews, got everything got ant reviews, as opposed to the movie that all the reviews basically said the movie was great.
The movie is the movie's special, and it's
I love the movie.
Is there's something endearing and charming and just so special.
Yeah. Well, the book on this one was by Craig Lucas, who I just love. But well, has he written the
I
book for a musical
think the
before?
Critics loved
The
him.
Light in the Piazza.
I was like, oh.
Oh, ugh.
Yeah, well, ugh. There you go.
Oh, really?
Really? Oh, no, I will arm wrestle you.
I gotta
on
go,
that.
Guys.
Did,
thanks.
Did not. I saw it with the original cast, and I could live without
oh,
it.
Me too.
What?
The Lisa. Set was beautiful.
Lisa.
Scenic wise, and the lighting was gorgeous.
Lisa, that's one that we actually agree on right
could
there.
Live
not
without
my
it.
Thing oh. either, I know.
Let's go.
2-2 right
Let's
here.
Let's go.
So, Ben Brantley. About Amelie said it neither offends nor enthralls. So, and I think that's sort of.
I mean, that's like you go out, yeah, no.
Yeah.
It was about, yes.
But one of the things it talks about the score, and the score is by Danielle Messé. I don't know if I'm pronouncing
Danielle
that
Messé?
Right. It's got an accent.
Danielle Messé?
Danielle Messé. Danielle Messé.
Danielle Messé?
The score proceeds in a smooth pastel stream that suggests pink champagne gone a bit flat.
Nice.
Not good. No. And then about Philippa Sue, this was sort of sad too, but while Miss Tattoo, who did the film, summoned Hepburn, talking about how both Philippa Sue and I forgot her first name, Tattoo, who played in the film, have sort of a Audrey Hepburn quality to her. They said that she summoned Hepburn into mischievousness. Miss Sue evokes Miss Hepburn's more steady and serene side in The Princess and the Roman Holiday. So it's not that playful
that quirky
character
kind
that we
of.
Had. Mm. So I'm sort of sad about
Which is
it.
Interesting because the whole character of Amelie is this quirky, imaginative, like that's who
yep.
she is.
Yeah.
Yep. That's interesting.
All right. So the other thing, I'm gonna blast through some of these. The other thing that opened on Broadway was the play that goes wrong.
Yay.
Otherwise, noises off, off, off.
Off, yeah. Well, I've been excited about this one.
I've heard such great things about this play.
I have wanted to, I have been, we've talked about this
for
a while.
We have. And again, the reviews here were better than Amelie, but still not great,
amazing.
Not super great.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and it does, you know, it harkens to Noises Off, and it's hard, it's basically the same general idea as Noises Off, but it's
yeah,
not
but what's
Noises
wrong
off.
With hijinks and calamity
nothing.
Backstage?
Oh, I have absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Because let me tell you, sometimes this audience sees a show, but they really don't know about this show backstage. It's a little more exciting.
So Ben Brantley said it's as close to a demolition derby as we're like Willie to see on Broadway.
Oh, was that good or bad?
It's,
I was about to say, wait a minute.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, it could. It
but,
just,
but you know, it could be bad.
Could be.
It depends if you like Demolition Derby.
Love Demolition Derby. I go see Demolition Derby right after I go see NASCAR. NASCAR.
She's so full of it. I love that y'all were all buying that one.
So here's a word that you get with context, but you don't. In another word that he didn't need to use. We talk about how critics tend to use words that... are sesquipedalian in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow. I love you were very excited to use that word.
I was.
Looked at us all like correct,
I was,
right?
And nobody,
right?
And nobody ran with
right?
me.
Right? Ted's mouse is in the background smiling at you.
So the sentence is, you will see a tacky, cheerful simulacrum of a classical creepy English manager.
Hmm.
Simulacrum.
Go for it, Lisa.
Nobody knows?
Go for it.
Similar and lackluster?
Well, here's how it's pronounced. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's just my whole thing. Just here's
your shtick is gone.
Oh my God, my shtick is sounds as wrong as it can get. Anyway, simulacrum means an effigy or an image.
Hmm.
So instead of saying
an
image of something like that,
simulacrum.
There you go. Simulacrum.
Simulacrum.
The other there is another word here that I have to see if it's in the same. Review. It's not. It's in a later review. We'll go to this. The other one is sort of fun. So the program is split up into two parts. The playbill's got the show and then the show, the fake show, which I think is sort of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. That sort of brings up
a very like Hedwig with the Hurt Locker playbill.
I love that.
You know what's so funny is I picked up the Hurt Locker playbill and read it again the other day.
It's
and
it, funny.
It just makes me laugh all the time. I'm like Bobby Cannavale. Yeah. Tay Diggs. I love they're in Hurt Locker the musical.
Well, great. That's actually a good segue to the next show, which you talked a little bit about last week, which is the Harry Eight.
Okay.
With Bobby Cannavale.
I was about to say, speaking of Bobby Cannavale, did you see the piece in the Times last week about this set and this 360
It's amazing. And it reminds me of, and I think we talked about it on the show a few months ago, and I forgot the name of the show in Europe that does, in that case, it had the audience was on a turntable and moved to different scenics. But this one has the scenery on a turntable. It's at the armory. It's huge. It's big and very bright. Most of the color scheme is neon yellow. Have you seen it?
I've seen a lot of the pictures.
There was this editorial in the Times, like a pictorial actually, last Sunday, that was just, my mouth kept dropping every time I saw another set change, and I was like, this is so cool.
But this is amazing. This sounds like something that would be really worthwhile seeing. It's the Harry Ape, Eugene O'Neill, set in this armory, and it's set down in the bowels of a coal-fired steamship.
I got that feeling from looking at the pictures, and it's still very stark, but I got that feeling.
Right, and there will be a link to both this review and last week's pictorial for folks to look at offstageonair.com. And again, Bobby Cannavale's in it. He carries the show. He got a great review.
Mm-hmm. I like him.
He likes you. I spoke to him yesterday, and he said, how's that Nicole doing?
Well, please tell him I send my love.
Ben Brantley called this show a serendipitous marriage of theater and real estate.
Ben was having a good day.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, he's been jaded lately.
Here's the word. Like most of O'Neill, the Harry Ape is a logorrheic play. Logorrheic.
Spell it, please.
Logorrheic. Yeah, I can't even get it from context, but it's pathologically incoherent.
Oh, I kind of like that. Yeah. Pathologically incoherent. Yeah.
So one of the things that I like about this review that sounds good, so we've talked a lot about the physical space and how they use that physical space, which is really sounds really incredible. He says, but while this production may work most effectively as a visual feast, just wait, in parenthetically, he says, just wait until you see how the closed set opens to embrace the armory's walls. It also gives full due to the patterns of O'Neill's language and the resonant repeated words, including stinging variations on the notion of hell and the verb to belong. It just sounds like it's a great show.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Ooh. Well, yeah, I want to see it. I kind of laughed. I was like,
I wish
first
they'd
Eugene
move
O'Neill
New York
I want
to
like
Austin.
Run to. Like, I never want to, I love it, but I never want to like run to it. And I'm like, wow. This made me want to run to it.
I love Eugene O'Neill, which is weird because I sort of liken him in a lot of ways to Tennessee Williams, who I don't like.
I was about to say, but you don't like Tennessee Williams.
I know.
So that is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you let me know what the play was in Spanish, please?
Zoologo de Cristal?
Thank you.
Also known as the Glass Meningere.
I just like when you say it. Thank you.
This is going to be like the days of Spider-Man and Turn Off the Dark. We can't go a week without mentioning that. Zoologo de Cristal. So here's what I want to bring down. And I want to recommend everybody to, if you have a Netflix account or it's like on all the streaming services, I watched the worst, best thing that it could ever happen. Has anybody seen this?
No.
This
is
the documentary about Merrily We Roll Along.
Oh, yes.
I was in tears at the end.
Good tears or bad tears?
Good tears, but it was very, very personal. It brought it personally for me. And what it was a documentary, is a lot of found footage. It was done, I cannot believe I'm forgetting this person's name, who was in it. He now directs all of Sondheim's stuff.
Lonnie Price,
thank you. he directed Put This Thing Together with all this old fountain footage.
I was like, they found so much footage.
He interviewed the leads, and we learned about what happened to these people. Since then, it was quite a chance-taking experiment they did back in 1981. Well, they did, just to bring it back to me personally, Merrily We Roll Along was at the Alvin right across the street from the Anta, which is where I was at the exact same time opening No Brother, which had a very similar story, except that we didn't have the pedigree of a Sondheim prince, which, by the way, was their last marriage.
Collaboration.
Yeah, the last collaboration.
Because I don't think it went well. Yeah, but you had Papa Pope.
Papa Pope. But he wasn't Papa Pope then.
Doesn't matter. Papa Pope
anyway,
was in your show.
But what was interesting to me was following all the other actors, and I apologize, I do not remember their names. I should have written them down. And what they've been doing since and how that show changed their lives in profound ways. And then that show being a flop and closing relatively quickly affected them in very profound ways. And I can point to the same exact experience. And when I look at and my IBDB page, Oh Brother is my only thing. And I look back at some of my colleagues that were in that show, and that's their only thing. And a lot of the people from Merrily We Roll Along, that was their only thing. And it was this really sort of sad experience to sort of relive that and to understand how incredibly different my life would have been had that show run. I'd be directing on Broadway right now. No, I would. Because I was a stage manager, and that's where it goes.
Your life isn't over, Lisa.
Great. Can I please direct something on Broadway?
So,
No, but it was very interesting. And Jason Alexander was in that show. And as folks know, he's a personal friend of mine. And I dropped him a lovely email afterwards. Or I think it was lovely, actually. He answered me back in a lovely email. But it was just... It was just a really moving experience for me. And I think it'd be very interesting for anybody to see, because it really shows the working of bringing a new piece of work with a mostly unknown cast.
Mm-hmm. I think the story of it being unknown is what's really kind of cool about it.
Yeah. And I forgot that. And again, I forgot the man's name. The lead role was replaced during previews. Well, the guy that played the lead, I forgot his name. He's now an agent, and he was Jason Alexander's agent for a while, which I thought was interesting.
Oh,
I just learned that yesterday when I spoke to my friend Brian Herskowitz. Shout out to Brian Herskowitz. It's called the worst thing that could happen. It's available on Netflix. It's really worthwhile seeing, and it's a beautiful piece, and you get to relive a lot of that music.
I love that score.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of awesome.
They didn't when it opened.
Well, I love it now.
Everybody loves it now. It's amazing how many times this show has been done since it flopped on Broadway.
And different incarnations of it.
Mm-hmm. And they had a lovely reunion concert that Lonnie Price put together that Sondheim and Prince showed up to sort of unexpectedly, I think. But and they've got footage of that. It's really, really beautiful. So that's it.
I haven't gotten to see it yet.
That was it.
I'm addicted to Feud right now.
What's Feud?
Joan Crawford and Betty Davis. Oh, I saw. Like, it is everything.
I saw a...
I want a bar in my bathroom just like Joan Crawford.
I saw a trailer, so that's worth seeing. What network is that on?
FX.
FX. Okay, everybody knows it but me. It's called Feud. Everybody look at it. So remember, every month around this time, the New York Times comes out with an article saying 5 must-see shows if you're in New York this month. I just want to run them down. It's actually a lot of things that we already know about, which
it's
I think is interesting.
Probably all the things I've been saying I want to see.
Hello, Dolly, which I've never heard of.
That's not on my list.
No, it's not?
I told you. I am obsessed with Bette Midler.
Love me
just
some Hello, Dolly.
Just do me in that show.
Okay. Oslo, which is currently in previews on Broadway. It was a hit off Broadway.
Yeah.
It's garnered a whole bunch of Lucy Lortel nominations, I think. Or it won the Lucy Lortel Award back in the day. At the Signature Theater, The Antipodes, which looks really interesting. That's the Annie Baker play.
Oh, I was like, which play is that? Okay.
Groundhog Day, which is also in previews. Can't wait for that to open.
Well, come on now. Rocky's in it.
Andy Carl. that's what I was going to do. I was listening to a little Rocky Dust musical yesterday in my car, and I was thinking,
I need
to play some of that for Nicole, and I didn't.
Lisa, did you know they had a full-size regulation boxing ring on the stage?
They did. No, I did not know
that. Did you know
that's
crazy, right?
Well, it came. It was on the stage and then moved out over the audience.
Yeah, it's a joke because we laugh about it.
We've been saying that.
Don't worry.
Clearly, Michael, you do not listen to our show every week.
I missed one or two episodes.
And went out into that. I experienced that whole bad boy.
Good for you.
Rocky Das musical. Yeah.
And the last one on this list is 6 Degrees of Separation.
I love this show.
Allison Janney. I've never seen it.
Oh, she's
I've never read the book.
Oh my God. First of all,
I was really young when I saw it years and years ago with Stockard Channing, everything, because like hello, it's Stockard. It is a really awesome script. I saw the movie. Did you see the movie with mm-hmm. Will Smith? And mm-hmm. actually, I thought it was really good. I was kind of surprised. Lovely piece, and I think Allison Janney will play that role really well and very different than Stockard.
And a Texan with John Benjamin Hickey.
Is John Benjamin Hickey a Texan?
He is.
And Allison Janney is an Ohioan from my hometown.
Ohio.
There we go.
Did I ever leave Ohio? Quick, what's round on the ends and high in the middle?
What?
Ohio!
Woo!
True story.
It's very true.
What town are you from in Ohio? But don't tell us too much.
I won't. I'm from the D-town, the Dayton, Ohio.
D-town. The D-town. I like that. No one's ever Dayton. Said I'm from I the D-town.
It makes Dayton sound so cool.
It's still there.
I played Dayton with the Skitch Henderson Orchestra.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Coming up just actually next week, so there's so much stuff happening getting ready for the awards season, but Present Laughter opens tonight.
Love
it's the 5th,
that
tonight.
Show.
Six Love. Degrees of Separation, which you just talked about, starts previews Love. Tonight and opens on the 25th. War Paint, I know you're looking forward to this.
I am.
Opens tomorrow night. Not for the Christine?
No, for the Christine. I was about to say, I was trying to be nice. Not for the Patty, but for the Christine.
So those are all sort of fun things. Let me see what else I have here.
But you know that the factory is now open right now.
What factory?
What does that mean?
Wonka!
Oh.
Okay, so who listens to the radio show Ask Me Another?
I do, and I haven't, though, in a long time.
Well, one Josh Groban...
You know I love me some Grobes.
One Josh Groban and Lucas Steele was on this week. And Lucas Steele plays the handsome man in...
the long
Natasha
title.
Pierre. Yeah, Natasha Pierre and the great comet of 1812. But they played this game where they took products... And they turned show tunes into jingles. I have four of those, and you guys have to guess the product and the show tune that it grabs. Y'all ready for the first one?
Even more than he did
this. Here we go. Here's the first one.
Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us serve it your way. So have it your way. Have it your way.
It's Burger King.
It's Burger King. And what show was that?
Rent.
Rent. Thank you. Because for the life of me.
Rent. In coffee.
Yeah.
I so could, because every time they went in, have it your way, that's all I could hear was the Burger King commercial, which it sort of sounds like that. Anyway, y'all ready for the next one?
I don't think they played that have it your way Burger King in like 10, 15 years.
I know, but
years.
That's, I'm 10 or 15 years old.
Well, me too.
Okay, here's the next one.
Nausea, heartburn, indigestion. Upset stomach, diarrhea.
Okay, what was that?
Pepto-Bismol?
Pepto-Bismol on the show?
Music Man.
Music Man, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right, two more. Y'all ready?
Yeah.
I mean, here we go.
Double your pleasure, double your fun. That's the statement of the great Mint Inn.
Anybody?
It's Cabaret and Double Mint.
Very good. Okay. And for the last one, just guess what it's going to be. No, I'm teasing. Okay. Here we go. Here comes the last one.
You could keep it to yourself, but it wouldn't be fair. Because that chocolate crispy taste is loved everywhere. Give me a break. Give me a break. Break me off a piece of that.
It's a Kit Kat bar.
Thought that was so funny. So that.
You love the Grobes? It's almost as good as that Grobes video I sent you of him singing in Fredericks of Hollywood.
Oh, I know you love the Grobes.
I love him.
I tried to get there with you. I tried to.
You know what? I'm not a big fan of the Grobes, but after seeing him, Pierre,
she came back.
I have not seen it
have
yet.
Have you seen it yet? Is anybody
I saw
other than
it
me?
When it was at Ars Nova.
Oh, but you saw it with what's
yeah,
his name
you didn't have Grobes.
I did not have Grobes.
No,
yeah.
You had the original guy that
Malloy.
Grobes that Grobes went to for
the composer.
The fact that I call him yeah. the Grobes and now all of you do too is just awesome.
Okay, the last thing I sort of want to talk about this article, but we're not going to really talk about it. Amanda Peet talks about the first time I didn't read a scathing review in the Times. And actually, this was in the art section, and it also translated for the not for the first time, rarely on my little New York Times app. It's got your daily briefling. Briefling?
Briefling.
Briefling.
Today's a briefling.
It's a briefling. So I got the briefling, and this article was on my morning briefling today. But talks about the effect of, and I should have said this when I was talking about Merrily, the effects that bad reviews give to people that's pointed at them. And she just talks about the times that she read a scathing review and then stopped reading scathing reviews. But you're not immune. You read if you don't read reviews, which I don't believe anybody doesn't read reviews personally, you will learn about them from the people that interact with you.
Touché.
By the way they look
mm-hmm.
at you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael just nodded, which works yep. very well on the radio.
just like my face, darling.
I have a face for radio. So backing up, the song we heard at the very beginning was called Someone in April from a show called Carmelina. And I decided that these first two songs that we're going to play are April songs, because you know why?
It's April!
April. That's right. So this one is called In April from Taking My Turn. We'll be right back.
I lost in April.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We have been talking to...
little things in life.
I think it's funny. That's
giggle.
Right. We've been talking to Michael Rader, Marie Falgren, and Jess Hughes, and now we're going to switch gears and talk to Michael Rader about his directing project that he's doing here in Austin, Texas, at a new theater, small little community space called Zach.
It's going to be going into its 85th year. Isn't that crazy?
Year.
Is that true?
85th season
wow.
is next season. Isn't that nuts?
Good for them.
That's
one of
amazing.
The 10 oldest regional theaters in the United States and the oldest in Texas.
You should do press wow. for that theater.
Isn't that crazy?
You should. So,
I
Michael,
think it's a cool fact.
You are directing Chanel in a production of Lady Day
yes, ma'am.
At Emerson's Bar and Grill, mm-hmm. which I keep wanting to say Lady Day at the Emerson's Bar and Grill.
You
and
can
I don't,
say that.
I was
no,
say,
but that's not the way.
Copyright infringement.
That's not the title.
It's copyright infringement. Go
the arrest
right ahead.
They're going to shut us down.
Shut us down. So, what the heck is this show about?
Well, it's about Billie Holiday. It's about
okay,
one of
well,
Billie Holiday's last performances. I love the playwright gives gives a summary in the script about why she wrote this piece. And she said her boyfriend went to see, she was in this dive bar in Philadelphia and went to see this jazz performance. And in sauntered very high Billie Holiday. And she performed 10 songs, 10 or 12 songs to 7 people. And here we are. This is like, you know, one of the greatest jazz musicians of all time. And at the end, the very end of her life, she ended up dying about 3 months later. And so this piece is sort of a recreation of that last concert.
Right. And yep. it got, when it opened in New York not too long ago with somebody, Audra McDonald. Somebody.
She's the female Hugh Jackman and J.J. Watt.
But there was a lot of
wrong.
There was a lot of talk about how Billie Holiday is presented in terms of the good and the bad.
Exactly right. She had she had a really difficult life. She went through. She was in poverty. She had a drug addiction issues. She was, subject to prostitution, and a lot of abusive relationships.
I'm sorry, the sex work thing I had not heard before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was a brief part of her life as well.
And it was young, wasn't she?
Young,
super, super young.
Very,
with that?
Very young. Yeah, scarily young.
Yeah.
And so with this, with our production, we're aiming to have more of a tribute to Miss Holiday as we're focusing on the legacy that she
right.
left behind and the path that she put forth for the jazz musicians and female singers And so this is, yeah, it's more of a tribute art production.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to take a quick shift to the right.
Shift.
During the last break, we asked you to choose a number between 2 and 53. Do you remember what you chose?
I chose 38.
Well, shall we hear what that is?
Let's hear.
Here we go.
Hello, I'm Ben Vereen. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsberry Austin.
Excellent choice.
Oh, Michael, you picked the good Ben
Wow.
Vereen of all the Ben Vereens. Yeah.
Both of the Ben Vereens.
Both two Ben Vereens. Really? You picked the good one.
He's got a good voice for radio.
Yeah, he does.
9 a.m.
You know what? If he
top hat, tails, and his chucks.
If he works hard enough, he may go somewhere that
you
boy.
Know that yep.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, he's yep. good. So this is a play with music.
It is. It's you know, it's set up kind of, well, not kind of, it is set up like a concert. So it's song, and then she talks a little bit about, she tells a story about her life, and then another song. She's backed up by a pianist, a drummer, and a bassist. And so it feels, we've designed the production also to feel very immersive. There's a bar on stage, our set and lighting design goes out into the house, you can go on stage and order drinks, there's seating on stage. So it feels...
Can I get sloshed?
You can...
Just like Billy.
Just that's like what Billy. I'm going to do. Yeah. And sing a few numbers. But this is a little markedly different than... and I forgot the name of the Janis Joplin one-woman show that I is think basically a concert.
A Night with Janis?
Yeah. But is that right? Is more like a just a concert.
Exactly.
Versus yeah. this, which has a narrative that
exactly.
goes along with it.
Absolutely. Yes. We All hear... Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
So what were your, talk about it from a directorial standpoint, because it sounds to me, and I've not seen it, so I'm going to go see it next week, I think.
You go Saturday.
I go Saturday.
Jess, our other guest, Jess and I both saw it last night.
Well, isn't Jess the coolest person?
Jess is cool like
Did
that.
Did y'all like yeah. it?
I loved it. I was telling Michael earlier.
Jess, you can tell the truth. Just because the director's here,
that's
it doesn't.
Okay.
Jess sat on the stage.
I did.
What'd you think about that?
Well, I mean, going back to you saying it was immersive, it felt like I was in a club sometimes, because with the lights pointing at her and with all the smoke, the audience sort of disappeared for me. So it was incredible. And
did
then
you
was...
start speaking with a gravelly voice?
Not me.
Yeah, I'm good.
So the difference of this in directing a piece like this, which is sort of like if I were to pin it on something, it's sort of like a cabaret kind of feel. So song talk. How does one approach that as a director?
Well, the biggest difference, you know, is that this is sort of a theater in the round setup for us. And so my first step is always the text. So, you know, the first few days of rehearsal, we're spending just on what's the story we want to tell? How are we going to tell the story? What's the arc of the character? And then we get into the more specifics of, okay, we need to set up a staging that works so that we are encompassing...
If that microphone can get away from
Whoops.
You.
We are encompassing everyone around us. And for sometimes that can be pretty challenging to, you know, you're at some point, always your back is to some part of the audience. So, you know, you have to stage and block things in a manner that, that is all encompassing. You're always moving. You're always working the space. You're always, you know, being aware of who am I facing? And
did it feel weird to do something like that? I mean, it is totally immersion and she plays it 360 all the way around, but is it hard to do something like that when you're on a stage that has a built-in proscenium? I mean, you're in this set space and creating a whole new space within it.
It's a bit challenging, but we've tried with the design to sort of break down that proscenium. We've put, you know, we have a whole bunch of cabaret tables on stage and we have a lot of lighting that's out into the house. And so that helps, I think. I think that bridges the gap for us.
And who's the scenic designer?
Michelle.
Oh Nye. My gosh.
Michelle Nye.
So yeah, she's worked there.
Michelle what?
Michelle Nye. Sorry,
yep.
I'm saying
okay.
Nye.
Yep.
Michelle Nye.
She's doing the set and costumes as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
excellent.
Fantastic. Beautiful costumes.
And we have, I'm assuming then, we have several costume changes.
Well, we have, no, she's in, I mean, because it's a cabaret performance, you know, like she's recreating this concert. She's in one gown for the entire time. She does have a fur that she removes, and we have some band members, obviously, that are in period pieces as well.
Well, I mean, it doesn't. With, I mean, you've noticed here as we've been talking, I've gone through six costume changes.
I've been so impressed.
And I liked the one before this. I just want to say
the sequins.
Yeah,
my favorite.
I mean, this one. I'm not,
it moved when she shimmied.
This one is good. The fringe on this one gets in the way of the microphone.
I'm interested to know. Obviously, like audiences who come to see this, they should know that they're seeing a one-woman show. What was it like to work with this specific actress on hearkening and channeling this very iconic role? What were some of the challenges of, and talk a little bit about the actress and her process of finding this voice.
So Chanel, who is playing Our Lady Day, has had a bit of a following in Austin. I think she's done three or four productions at the Zac, and so people in the community sort of know her. But her background is as a singer, and so she, I mean, this is a marathon of a role. This is an hour and a half of her basically singing and talking without stopping. I mean, she gets a little intermission break, but you know, I always like to approach these kind of roles very gently. It's a lot to ask of someone. I mean, they have a lot on their shoulders when they're delivering this much material. And, you know, this goes there. I mean, the second act, she's high on heroin, and, you know, it's a big role to conquer. And so, you know, we started again, like I said earlier, with just focusing on the text and not trying to overwhelm her with the enormity of the role. And we've had a nice lengthy rehearsal process with this, which has been a great,
How long did you rehearse?
We have just about 3 weeks of rehearsal. Now we have a week of previews,
that's
and then
a
we
long
open.
Time
it's a long for a one woman show.
Yeah,
we've been very lucky.
It's a long time.
Yep. Yep.
It felt like it went really quickly.
So you are opening tonight?
Well, we start previews tonight.
We
open on the 13th.
Okay, you open on the
next
13th.
Yeah.
The website says April 5th. It did not distinguish between previews and opening. So the official opening is on the 13th. And when do you guys close?
Well, we run for for 3 weeks on the main stage, and then we're actually transferring the production to the Black Box space.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
The Wizenhut.
The Clayburgh. But the Wizenhut is the Round Theater.
Yep.
Which so I would call the Black... Oh, no, I guess the Clayburgh would be the Black Box.
Yeah,
you're
so
correct.
We have another run there.
Oh, awesome. How long is that second run?
That's a great question.
Okay, well, it'll be on the website.
We'll let you know very soon. It's on the website right now.
Well, Michael Rader, thank you so much
for
being on the show.
My pleasure.
I hope you'll stick around and join us backstage.
I will stick around and join you.
Excellent.
Yes, because
backstage.
We have many other questions. You are a fascinating individual.
Am I?
You are.
Uh-oh.
Okay, that was... Michael Rader of Zac Theater's production of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Zac Theater, top for stage, starting previews tonight, April 5th through the 30th, and then it has another life at the Kleberg stage. For more information, zactheater.org. And let's go out listening to a little bit of Chanel singing Crazy He Calls Me.
I'll say I'll care forever, and I mean forever, if I have to hold up the sky.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We've been talking to Michael Rader, Marie Falgren, and Jess Hughes. We're going to take just a little second to talk some local stuff. One of the things I wanted to tell folks about, I didn't know this until yesterday, and I was like looking on the... Or actually, I got an email. Peter and the Starcatcher at the theater school, the High School for the Deaf.
Isn't that cool?
This weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I've been out there to see some of their shows, and it's really incredible. And if folks have some time this weekend, they tend to sell out because they only play a weekend. But
it's a big theater, so it's kind of interesting.
No, I'm sorry. I asked.
That was so mean.
She wanted me to pick up.
I asked Nicole to pick something up for me because I didn't want to leave the microphone, and of course you did it while you were talking. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But totally my fault. She didn't ask me. She just pointed.
But
like a little dog. I was like, and.
But it is indeed a large theater, and it's really worthwhile seeing. They of course use ASL throughout. And it's very interesting to go see musicals there. Very fascinating. So I had something printed out. There will be a link at offstageonair.com. But if you Googled Austin School for the Deaf, you'd get the information for it. And Peter and the Starcatcher. That, I believe, is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at their campus, which is downtown on South Congress.
We've also got Mary Moody Congress. Northern Theater, St. Edward's, opening their production of Cabaret, directed by Danny Herman, choreographed by Rock of Aristique. That opens tomorrow.
Oh, cool. And how long are they playing? Three
this weekend and next weekend.
Okay.
It's only 2 weekends? I thought it was always three. It's two, huh?
Yeah. Don't quote me.
Go look at the stedwards.edu website, and you'll find it. And we love Danny and Rocker.
Yep.
I can't go wrong with the two of them. You know, I worked with Danny back in the day.
Where?
We did industrials together. We worked Coca-Cola, several Coca-Cola shows. So the last thing I want to talk about, I'm going to do a quick little rant. This last weekend, I was able to participate in the last show at the Institution Theater on their main stage.
Oh, I heard
they
all
closed.
About your performance.
Oh my God, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
No, Michael Furstenfeld.
Yes.
Because he's part of this with
yes.
you.
Yes, Michael
he
Furstenfeld.
He said you were on fire.
I'm always on fire.
You were on fuego, baby.
So, but the point of this was the hemorrhaging of theater space that we're having here in Austin, and that Tom Booker's Institution Theater was losing their main theater space. And I was under the uninformed assumption that it was the same reason why Salvage Vanguard and Off Center are closing, is because the rents are too damn high. But when I got there, I learned that the city is shutting them down for the lack of a handful of parking spaces.
Yeah. That's just even worse, right?
Handful of parking spaces.
That's even more painful.
And here's the deal. Code Next is going to be coming out in about a year and a half or so, which will make all these things moot. And why couldn't this city simply have said, you know what?
We'll grandfather you in for a
Or bit. We're just going to, we'll ignore you for the next year and a half.
But doesn't Code it Next. Give you a message of our city's?
Correct. And that's the thing. And so part of this show is actually very interesting. This was the last show, and we moved from the main stage to their studio space, which is a much smaller space. And the last act of this show was a interview with the guy that wrote the omnibus bill. I forgot his name, so I apologize. And so when it came to questions and answers, I basically asked him that question. Why couldn't you just turn a blind eye for a year and a half on this? Here's how you can help right now. You can keep this place open by not doing anything. And the answer was no. Mm-hmm. And my question to the city of Austin is why? Why are you so insistent that theaters shut their doors?
Mm-hmm. Over silly things. That's just it.
No reason for it.
If it's something huge or big or it's like it's something that's fixable. And it's something that's so small. I'm like, really?
Well, it's not, and the parking is not an issue there. It's just, it doesn't, the numbers in the code don't match with the numbers he has there. Oh. So if you are listening, Mayor Adler, who I love, Code Compliance, who I don't love, you know, you should stop saying how much you care about arts in Austin unless you really mean it. And I don't believe you mean it.
Way to go, Lisa.
That's it.
Apparently, your improv and the words that you said, I heard some amazing stuff about your performance on Sunday. Friday, you may not remember, but I just want to let you know it all came back to me. Everybody Saturday, Sunday, and Monday were like, Lisa Shep! So,
well, that's very nice.
Hats off to you, Lisa.
I was a minor player in this bigger stage piece with the likes of Rudy Ramirez, Tom Booker, Jenny Lavery, and...
Michael.
Oh, well, Michael Furstenfeld. No, there's in our piece. Michael's, it was his whole show. We just did one little piece. Not Ron Barry, but.
Loretta Lynn.
Loretta Lynn.
Great.
That's it.
Thank you, Miss Lynn.
Who I have worked with and is a lovely person. Let's jump right into Today in Theater History because we're late. Yes.
Tell me.
Okay, I'm going to skip a whole bunch of these. But 1998, I don't remember this. But let's see those New Yorkers and people that are smarter than me, which is everybody here. This was a revival of a show that starred Quentin Tarantino and Marissa Tomei.
Oh.
Yes, I do remember this.
Anybody? It was written by Edward Albee.
Yeah.
Late of the University of Houston.
Oh, my God!
At the Vineyard Theater.
It's not Frankie and Johnny.
Three Tall Women.
No,
Three
it wasn't. Women. Yeah, thank you. I couldn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just mixed up two things.
Oh, Lisa. That's not Edward Albee.
No, it wasn't Edward Albee. It wasn't Three Tall Women. It wasn't the Vineyard. It was Wait Until Dark.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but I do remember this
And it
song.
Was at the Brooks Atkinson. Yeah, this is, you know, it's not no small sin. So Quentin Tarantino and Marissa Tomei, wouldn't you just love to see them
You had
together?
Three Tall Women in your head because we had Three Tall well, Women it's on recently.
Right, Royce but City it's also Theater. On here, and I was going to talk about them. It was highlighted. It opened in 1994. 2001, this was the revival of Follies. I can't believe that
wow.
long ago.
Oh, my gosh.
I love that show.
Yeah, me too. This was also the revival of Evita with Ricky Martin and Elena Rogers.
Don't cry for me.
Don't cry for me.
But that was not 2001. That was 2013?
2012. Did I say 2001?
Yeah.
I should just be fired today.
Nope.
All right. The Pirate Queen, 2007.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's like forgetting about Spider-Man.
With Stephanie J. Black.
Were you at the Gypsy Run?
I was not, but I did see it.
Were you at the Gypsy
maybe
Run?
Maybe I was at the Gypsy
yeah.
Run.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it and
it was great. It was an amazing experience.
Well, it's now I want to see it. We're gonna run away. Birthdays: Spencer Tracy, Betty Davis, Becky Davis, her sister,
her alter ego,
Gregory Peck.
Yay.
Frank Gorshin, who I met, he wasn't very nice. Michael Moriarty. Locally, it's Sonia Moore, Alejandro Rodriguez, who's got another last name. I can't remember what it was. And Kate Trammell. Tomorrow, it's Jeff Miller and Shannon Sedgwick.
Bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire. So let's listen to a little bit of the Pirate Queen, and we're going to come right back.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
I have my dreams. I have made plans.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with only Lisa Sheps.
No!
That was Nick Squared, Nicole Shiro, and Nick Mayo.
You're about to get a kick in the shin.
We were talking before with Michael Rader, and we are going to shift gears and talk about Sense and Sensibilities. Introducing again, we have Jess Hughes. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
And we have Marie Fahlgren.
Hello.
And
I'm glad you brought some Sense and Sensibility into this joint today.
Because we needed both.
We need it.
Especially with our host. And those costume changes.
Yeah, well, how do you like this one?
Not so much.
It's the cowboy motif.
Sashay away. Amazing.
Okay, you guys are doing Sense and Sensibilities at Austin Playhouse.
We are.
Out there in the mall.
I have to say right now, Jess, you look so pretty in your red dress in those press images.
Thank you. I don't get to wear a red dress in the show because that's not very sensible.
But I do.
Jane Austen doesn't write nonsensible things. So this is the Jane Austen story. About what?
About these two sisters, Eleanor and Marianne, and their father has just passed away. It's the late 1700s, and at that time, all the money went to the men, so their older half-brother gets all their inheritance, and they're left with nothing, and suddenly everything matters. I mean, who they talk to, who they hang out with. And my character, Eleanor, is the sensible one, so I kind of take on that fatherly role. And Marianne has a lot of suitors.
More free-spirited and doesn't think about the rules as much.
So Marianne's a kind of a party girl.
Yeah.
Sounds like Snooki and JWoww. It's a little bit like Snooki and JWoww.
Right. They're too young. They don't even know what that is. No,
it's okay. I'm not young. And I don't know. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but I've never seen it. The Jersey Shore.
Oh, okay.
Sure. I knew that.
Sure. I was like, come on now. Look at this Jersey girl. You better come on.
But yeah, I mean, Marianne goes out for like the bad boy. You know,
yeah.
Sir John Willoughby.
That's his name?
Yes.
Sir John Willoughby.
Willoughby. Yes.
That Jane Austen, her characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like Sense and Sensibility. It's one of my favorites.
I have never seen it, nor read it, nor anything. So I will be new to this when I see it.
This is a really fun production. There's a whole chorus of gossips in there.
Explain that more, Jess.
So in the book, there's a lot of gossip happening. A lot of what you hear about that's happening to the family is said by people around the town. So in this play, they just decide to make it a chorus of about five people that are kind of always in scenes and always interrupting and being like, ooh, that's scandalous.
kind of manipulating the scenes a little bit too. And yeah, it's I gotta say, when I first was gonna do Sense and Sensibility, it was a little intimidating in a way, just because I was like, Jane Austen is a lot to take on, but this is like, it's a little modernized. Adaptation is really fun. We have some great music in it, like Adele and Beyonce.
Really?
Happening.
Yeah, we got and some
so,
Beyonce.
It's really like, it modernizes a little bit.
Who directed this piece? Who's your director?
Laura Toner.
Lovely Laura.
Laura Toner, we love her.
Yeah.
Artistic director, co-artistic director of Austin Playhouse. And who adapted this? Do you know the name of the person that adapted
Kate
it?
Kate Hamill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did a production 2 years ago in New York. Mm-hmm. It's the Bedlam Theater Company. And they did it to where the audience was on the sides and they just had this long aisle that they were performing on, like a runway sort of deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything's on wheels. So we have doorways and chairs and windows all on wheels,
right?
So
the
set kind of moves around.
Are 44 scenes.
44 scenes.
Come again? 44?
And 44 locations?
44 scenes.
More or less.
I mean, transition between each one. So yeah, it goes fast.
What's the challenge in doing such a classic piece and maintaining the integrity of the story with these new influences? Can you talk a little bit about the challenges of that? Like, people know and love and have a relationship to this piece, and then you're kind of flipping it on the head.
Definitely.
So, from an artist standpoint, what are some challenges that go into that?
The whole show, I mean, it moves so quickly, and we're kind of, like, my character. What's really fun is I don't have a lot of blocking notes because I get moved around a lot.
On a piece of scenery with wheels?
Yeah, on a piece of scenery with wheels.
That's what I need.
She just goes by signal.
Whee!
She's coming through the scene.
There's some great moments like that, yes, for sure. Yeah, so like having to dive into some of those deeper moments, especially with my character, because she's very sensible, and there are...
you seem so frustrated by that.
I don't get to... there are so many crazy parts of this show. I mean, so much is happening around my character, and I'm in love with somebody, and he is going to be married to somebody else, and still, even then, I have to maintain this like stone-faced presence. Mm-hmm. And finally, at the end, I get to burst.
Yeah.
Literally. And but it's
Please don't
unless it's on the final performance. Then burst away.
Got 4 weeks to go.
It's an extreme. Like, there's like the far comedic, like physical comedy happening, and then there's the very heart-wrenching moments that happen. And between Jess and I feel like that's kind of our job, is to make sure that story and that connection of sisterly love is still told throughout this crazy whirlwind that's happening around us.
Around them.
And it's far extremes one way to the other. And so as long as we hold on to that, and that was the main thing that Laura said, was like, I don't want to lose the story in all of this. There's a lot happening. So make sure that we actually care about the characters and that love story is told.
Awesome. And y'all are prepared to do a piece for us in this.
Yeah.
Do you want to set up the scene?
Again, we have like not the funniest scenes together.
That's just like a precursor. Warning. Yeah. It's not funny.
We were like, funny and light.
Very quick, like, Jess, is your character sensible?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
You got it.
Is she very sensible?
Super, very, very sensible.
Super sensible.
Okay, so we're going to run out of time. We have just a few minutes.
Did we say very sensible again? Okay. Okay, so to set up the scene, Marianne has just been hectoring Edward, who's my love interest, who was trying to recite some Shakespeare, and he's just not very good at it.
I take that very seriously.
Okay, so this is Marie Fahlgren and Jess Hughes doing a scene from Austin Playhouse production of Sense and Sensibilities.
I think that Edward is very sensible. His mind is excellent, and if he is not always a brilliant orator, it is only shyness that impedes him.
Indeed.
He may sometimes appear awkward, but I think that is only because he strives so earnestly never to hurt any living creature by careless thought or action.
Yes.
Perhaps he is not fashionable.
No.
Perhaps he is not even widely considered handsome, but once you notice his eyes, which are uncommonly good, and consider the general sweetness of his expression, well, I think him very handsome indeed. But what say you, Marianne?
I swear that when you tell me to love him as a brother, I shall think him perfect indeed.
Marianne, I do not deny that I think very highly of Edward, that I greatly esteem him, that I like him.
Esteem him, like him. Ugh, cold-hearted Eleanor.
Excuse me for speaking in so quiet a way of my feelings. Believe them to be stronger than I have declared, but I'm not sure that Edward feels anything for me beyond friendship.
Eleanor.
He may have a kind of a preference.
Aha.
But there are other points to be considered, Marianne. He is dependent on his mother for a living and must obey her wishes in all things. Edward would face many challenges if he wished to marry a woman with no fortune.
You must not be diffident, Eleanor. Edward is obviously desperately in love with you, and no material obstacle can stand in the way of love for long. That means it is only a matter of time.
Before?
Before he binds his soul to yours forever.
Where do you pick up these phrases?
That's it. Yes, well, then she pokes me and I call her a goose.
A goose.
That's awesome.
That's and hilarious.
Then she goes by in the scene. Whee! Yeah.
We are totally out of time. When do you guys open?
We opened.
You opened. When do you close?
We close on April 30th.
Yeah,
April.
all through the month of April.
April 30th. And where can folks go to get more information?
AustinPlayhouse.com.
Okay, awesome. Thank you guys for being on the show, and I hope y'all can come be with us backstage.
Thank you.
I would hope that a lot. That was Marie Falgren and Jess Hughes of Austin Playhouse production of Sense and Sensibilities by one Jane Austen, playing now through the 30th of April. For more information, AustinPlayhouse.org.
Com.
I'm doing that by memory.
So,
you know what? We're going to skip the last little piece of music. It was going to be a fun one. It was called Leave It to Jane. I know. Perhaps I'll put it on the podcast.
Can you put it on the podcast?
I can. I can absolutely do that. So we've done another week. We're done. It's good to have the kids back together again, everybody.
The gang's all here.
Woo-woo!
Thank you. Nick
Squared.
Thank you for a great show.
It was fun. So Austin Modern News is next. If you're listening to us on the radio, if you're listening to the podcast, stick around. We're going backstage amongst the dumpsters. And this is from Cagney the Musical.
We've talked about this and talked about that. I'd say we almost.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Riley didn't get to see me kiss the musical. The hapless story of a young woman in search of the art of other people seeing her kiss people. I don't know.
Yeah.
But here we are. We are backstage. We've traversed the stage door. We're down the stairs next to the dumpsters, kicking away the rats and the other things that are hanging around. But just enough room for us to sit and talk. And here with us is Jess Hughes. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
Marie Falgren.
Hello.
And am I pronouncing your name correctly every
Falgren.
Time? Every time I say it, I keep thinking, I wonder if it's Falgren, and I keep calling it Falgren.
Yeah, falling grin.
Well, I wish that the camera was on right now.
Yes, this is it.
And Michael Rader, which I want to say Rotter.
You can say Rotter.
You say Rotter,
I'll say Rader.
You say Schmutter, I say Schmader.
When are you taking this show on the road?
I love it. I'm going to start with Michael because I was sent your bio,
uh-oh,
which was pretty amazing. And I'm just going to start with this paragraph.
Oh, gosh, don't.
Yeah, no, I have to.
Yeah,
because this is good.
Yeah.
Michael is passionate and committed to finding ways of utilizing the arts as a tool to empower the lives of those less fortunate, especially children in need. It was during his initial time working with the chronically ill children that Michael fully realized his passion for humanitarian work, especially when it involved working within the arts. And we talk about that kind of stuff all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
On this show. Oh, good.
So, good.
Lisa, tell Michael the mission of Lisa runs a theater.
Yeah,
tell
we
Michael
have
the mission.
And Nicole's on the board. Our mission is to produce work by and for underrepresented
communities.
Thank you. Underrepresented communities.
Amazing.
So we're you know, and I find that a lot of us here in the Austin theater scene are really dedicated to arts education and working with different communities.
I love
so
that.
So talk about that part of your life.
Well, I came from a really, and I didn't know it at the time growing up, but I was in a really amazing arts mecca in Dayton, Ohio, believe it or not, growing up.
I don't believe that.
Believe it. There were about four or five national corporations that were based in Dayton, and they poured money into the arts. And so we had this amazing organization called the Muse Machine, whose mission was to basically bring the arts into the schools in New York. Uh-huh. I mean, in Dayton, sorry. And
I get those two mixed up
all the time. And so I grew up surrounded by the arts and saw what a difference the arts can make for children, especially kids who, like me growing up, I didn't really have, I mean, I went to a private Catholic school. I was certainly an outsider. I didn't have, I didn't feel like I fit in and belonged anywhere. And then I found the arts and theater and was like, oh, this gives me voice. I have a voice now. And I feel like I'm surrounded by other people who understand me. So that was my growing up. And then I moved after undergrad and I moved to New York. I got involved volunteering pretty quickly for the Hole in the Wall Gang organization, mm-hmm. which is Paul Newman's organization for terminally and chronically ill children. And I got involved initially because they do a big gala every year to raise money, and got involved that way on the artistic side, and came to this camp and saw what a profound impact this organization was having on these children and how the arts were playing a role in that. And at that point in time, I was an actor, and I said to my agent, look, I'm taking some time off and I'm going to this camp for a summer and I'm just going to work there. And so I worked as their director of entertainment for a summer. And you know, people love helping children in need. And so as their director of entertainment, I got to just put on like shows all day long. I would call people and say like, hey, cast of Wicked, do you want to come up on your day off and do a performance for, you know, 100 sick kids? And they always would say, yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes, of course. We'll come up and absolutely we'll do that. You know, David Blaine came out and did a magic show for these kids, like, you know, walking around, you know, just the camp. And so it's something that's very near and dear to my heart. And I see constantly how the arts can save lives and just empower children. My God, the difference it can make in a child's life, not even a child's life, in everyone's life.
Everyone's life.
Exactly.
And,
right.
And it affects not only the people, the kids, or the whoever it is that you're working with, but it also affects you
and me
and your and your cohorts.
Exactly. Right.
In the worst best thing that ever happened, the woman that played Mary on Broadway is now working with disadvantaged youth. And they show a piece of her working with these kids that have mental disabilities, and just their amazing work. So that's good. Yeah. I applaud you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for doing that. And
we talk about it a lot on this thing. Jess and Marie, y'all are involved. I know you're involved in the education arm of Austin Playhouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And who are y'all? We were just talking about that before we went on the air. Who are you guys playing to?
We actually, what's really great about Austin Playhouse, we just started our program about a year ago, and we had this amazing donor give us money to offer free theater to the youth. So every single performance we put up is completely free to the schools and to the public. So we are now doing our second show, actually. Jess is in rehearsal for it now. We open next Monday, and we run for 2 weeks, and we have two shows a day usually, and my job is to coordinate the schools to come in.
We already discussed that. You are the producer-director.
Yes, producer. I gave myself coordinator title, and she gave me producer.
Yeah.
I'll take producer.
Lisa will give you a raise.
Maybe I'll give you a upgrade. Optimize.
Yeah. Upgrade. You just tell Laura and Don I to double your money.
Yeah, so it's really an amazing thing. I mean, it's very unique to have a Theater for Youth program where we don't have to worry about finding a title that's going to make us money or anything. Like, money just isn't an issue or, in the conversation when we're talking about our program. And so it's really amazing. It's very new. So, like I said, only a year into it. But the response from the schools is amazing. And we're going to just only invite Title I schools first and see if they're interested. And then we'll kind of spread it out to the rest of the community. But Title I has just booked us all. So, like, we have even extended our invitation out further because we can't.
Tell me how that makes you guys feel. You know, I get it that the organization is doing real. How do you guys feel doing this work?
Go ahead, Jen.
I was you perform a lot. I mean, you do a lot of youth theater from Pollyanna for years, now doing this Austin Playhouse with children. So, I mean, what do you get? It's been a long time. I used to do a lot of kids theater. I miss it. But what do you get from doing that?
I love it so much. I mean, they're so there with you for the entire show. And they're really able to let themselves exist in that world of theater and the world of play. There's a lot of call and response, and they're really tough critics, too.
They'll tell you what you're
which
failing.
Which is amazing.
Like, they do tell you right then and there.
So I'm guessing that you get some sort of fulfillment out of this yourself as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's sort of what we were going for.
Hearing like 100 children laughing so hard at like 9 in the morning is the best thing. From just like a little like shake, you know, a bottom shake or something that you do on stage, like, that's the best thing. You're like, oh, yes, this is exactly the sound I want to hear at this so early in the morning.
Well,
so,
we love the work that everybody's doing. And I don't know many people from at any place in theater that can't point some time in their background to working with kids and youth or somehow underserved people. So, Michael, you're from Dayton. What brought you from Dayton to the theater? Were you doing theater in high school in Dayton?
I was. I started early. We had a
like at 8 in the morning or
very early in the morning and early in life too. No, I was when I was 10 years old. I was running a rep company in my parents' driveway.
Of course, love it.
We were doing The King and I. I mean,
Nicole doesn't like that show.
I did. Well, we also did Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay, she likes that show.
And I do like King and I. Yeah. I'm thinking of Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, we didn't try to tackle that. I didn't have a horse, so we couldn't
do it. That ballet just goes on forever.
You don't have to do the ballet.
I know, but people
cut
seem
it.
To.
Cut it. Yeah. In my driveway productions, cut.
So were you the director of your productions?
Oh, I directed. I literally drafted contracts for the neighborhood kids. Of they course. Had to sign
I
for
love
rehearsals.
It.
And actually, this is. And then I, of course, starred in all of them as well.
Of course.
And I was the most inappropriately cast King of Siam and Tevye ever. There are videos that exist.
You had your own Jonathan Pryce moment?
Exactly. Yeah, so I started early.
Are are you still in contact with any of your fellow players from those
days?
Well,
yes, I still am. My brother and sister were actively involved because they were.
So you still talk to them?
They had to
were
be involved.
Were you the oldest?
I'm the oldest, okay. Of course, yes.
Of course.
My mother was the choreographer. She was involved.
Oh, I love
to choreograph the pieces. And then the neighborhood kids, yes, we're still friends with some of those. They've not managed to run away from me yet.
Awesome. So so you had the bug. And what was the germ? What made you? Did can you point to some event that?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, growing up in an arts mecca, we had.
We keep forgetting
tours.
That Dayton was the arts mecca.
I keep saying that, but it really was. We had tours that would come through all the time in Dayton. This little town could support them. They just had all this funding. And Keith Prentice was an actor who starred. He was the original Rolf in the. In the
Sound of Music
on Broadway. Mm-hmm. He was from Dayton, and he, after his career was sort of finished in New York, he decided he wanted to come back to Dayton, and he started this outdoor amphitheater called Theater Under the Stars. And it was outside, and they would do two or three musicals a summer. And that's sort of how I got bit. And then my mom and I auditioned, and we started doing
your mom and you
productions together. Yep, and that was it. Then I got bit, and then I started doing, you know, children's theater and worked my way up through high school and then went to study
The art of theater.
Where did you go to college to study?
I went to Baldwin-Wallace Conservatory and Wright State University for my undergrad, and then I got my master's degree in directing from the Actors Studio in New York City.
And so when did you make that switch?
Well, since I knew that I wanted to be a director and an artistic director since I was very young, since I was 10, doing Tevye in my driveway.
Doing Siam most inappropriately.
Exactly right. But I've always known that I wanted to go that direction. I was directing an undergrad, and when I moved to New York, I started taking jobs trying to assist as much as I could. And then the market crashed, and theaters were closing everywhere, and auditions weren't nearly what they used to be. And I said, well, if I'm ever going to go back to school in New York, this is the time to go back to school. And I knew I didn't want to leave New York. I wanted to stay in the city. And so I applied, interviewed, and got in. And
so I didn't know that they had a directing program at the Actors Studio.
They do.
Are you relegated to working with the method when you learn direction at the Actors Studio? What's the deal with that?
Well, it's very, it's very method driven.
I'm wondering, when he said directing, I'm like, whoa, do they put that method into the directing too?
It's very method driven. Yeah. So it's a terminal degree. So it's a 3-year program. And the first year.
Do you die at the end?
Basically. If not then, you die 10 years later with your student loans. But the first year you are taking acting classes with the acting MFA students as well. So you're very, very engulfed.
You're in the trenches.
You are in the method 100%. But then really developing your craft as a director, they're very open to you finding your own toolbox and what works for you and how you communicate. Kazan said, I love this quote, that directing is turning psychology into behavior.
True.
And I love that sort. That's my MO when it comes to directing. That's my approach.
And as a director, you'll have your own stuff, your own way of approaching things, but you may work with actors that do the method, Meisner, nothing at all.
Exactly.
And
right.
You have to work with all those people in the same space.
So exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, it was a good training ground for me.
Okay. Jess and Marie, do either of you direct?
No.
I attempted to.
let's hear that story.
I directed Willy Wonka.
That's exciting.
The one that's on Broadway right now?
Hopefully people like it. it was only a 6 like professional, like we had 6 professionals doing the main roles and then 30 local kids doing the rest.
Wow.
And it was my first tackle of directing.
That's a lot of people for a first tackle.
That's a
tackle.
Big tackle.
It was crazy. Yeah. And I didn't want to do I didn't want to have the grandpa like fly really, so I went to like have my own take on all like the magical parts of Willy Wonka, and so like the blueberry expanding and everything, I like kind of I was pretty ballsy with it. I like I had the grandpa float up on a ladder. They like went backwards on a ladder, and so like in it was all like found art kind of stuff, right? And then like the blueberry, I used umbrella that matched the pattern of her dress, so then her blueberry like it was like an umbrella that came out. And she was like a big blueberry. What else? There was like so.
Well, so I have to call you out because your comment that when you said you sort of tried, and then you then point back with pride to all these very innovative things that you did.
Yes.
So I'm getting some messages here.
Sure. No. Yeah. Well, I guess it was just kind of a weird thing because I did it in the middle of nowhere in Montana, and I think my new ideas were just a little too new maybe to the crowd that was getting it, right? I mean, they were expecting your traditional, you know, how you would see it. So
well, that's how Julie Taymor started.
Right? Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had fun with my little experiment doing it, but the aftermath was like, maybe I went too far. Maybe people don't really like it. But it was a lot to direct all those people and kids and, you know, a 70-year-old man flying up a ladder and
Was he indeed 70 years old?
What's that?
Was he indeed 70
he
years
really
old?
He really was. Yeah. He was a dentist. We found like a retired dentist.
Oh my God.
That we found.
This sounds like it needs a documentary.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I love it. It could be a double feature after the Mary Lee roll along.
It was fun. But yeah. So anyways, that's my one.
So how did you get from Montana to here?
So I graduated from school in Missoula, and then I went to New York for a year. I sold my car, went to New York, and had like 6 jobs, and it just kind of drove me to the ground. And so I was like, and then I got the job back at home for
6
the summer.
Theater jobs?
No.
In 1 year?
Unfortunately.
Oh, 'cause I was about to say, that's really good.
Yeah, no, that would have been like great. I would never have left. No, just a lot of 6 random jobs. 6. Anyways, I went back to Montana for the summer and directed and did this. And then by the end of the summer, I went to Scotland for a little bit, and then I was going to go back to New York, and I was just too cold and too broke. I was like, I can't take New York anymore. So I kind of just...
Yes, no is a 4-letter word.
Yeah.
And Jess, you may have told us this before, but I forgot. So tell us again where you're from.
South Padre Island.
South Padre.
I was like, she's from Spring Break.
She's from Spring Breakville.
Oh, yeah. Bikinis and booze. That's Jess all the time.
So you're from South Padre Island.
Yes.
Wow. How was that?
There's not much to do on South Padre Island.
You could do theater in your driveway.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah. Padre Spring Break Padre?
No, I don't know what
like
it is.
MTV used to film there.
They used to go film there.
Okay.
That is Cancun.
And Girls Gone Wild.
Okay.
That's
There's
where
a
most
long
Girls Gone Wild
Barrier Island at the south part of Texas, starting at Corpus Christi going south. Mm-hmm. And Corpus Christi is Padre Island, and then south of that. It's like an hour south. I mean, it's not even close. It's really long at the other end.
It goes to the tip, but I should say it is a national park. You can get a national park passport stamp.
We talked about this.
I used to get those as a kid.
Oh my God.
I had my little book.
I just gave Lisa one. She just got her first stamp.
I had one as a kid.
It is the longest untouched piece of coastal line anywhere in the United States.
I have a project for
South
us.
South Padre. Go on a road trip together in a Winnebago with our passport books?
We should create one of those passports for theaters around the country.
Oh my God, I totally will.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Oh my God, I totally will.
Copyright.
Yeah. How about a musical about people who go on national parks?
Okay.
I got a stamp.
We're filled with
what
ideas.
Did you get?
We are filled with ideas.
I went to Big Ben and I got a stamp. You're supposed to tell me where you went now.
I went to South Padre. And I got a tramp stamp.
Yeah, that's more like it.
That sounds about
that
right.
That sounds about right.
So how did we get from South Padre to here?
I lived there.
You what?
Oh yes. How did we? I thought you meant here in the conversation.
No. How do we? The royal we. How did Jess Hughes get to Austin from South Padre? Did you go to New York too?
No, I went to school at Southwestern.
If you had said yes, University. Then all of us had lived in New York.
Nah, I tried out Chicago for a little bit.
Chicago's
a good
town.
I liked it.
We're Chicago gals.
Chicago has a great theater scene, although it is really difficult to get into. It is very insular.
It is. Again, and also, snow is a 4-letter word.
Right. It doesn't snow that much in Chicago.
I don't know what you're
talking
about.
I'm just sorry. It doesn't snow that much.
You know, I complain about it, but I rode my bike in
that
weather.
I know. You keep telling us that, but you know what?
Crack. I'm going to say it was the drugs in college.
So you went.
They kept you warm in Chicago?
Came here because you were at Southwest Texas?
Southwestern. Yeah, this one's in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. I get those two mixed up. I just say the school in Georgetown and the school in San Marcos.
Well, the names changed, so they got confused.
To protect the innocent.
There you go.
But Georgetown has a good theater program. Do they not?
Georgetown has
an iffy theater program.
Anymore. When I went there, Rick Romer was teaching, and we had this really great visiting director that took us to Bulgaria every summer to do theater in the mountains.
Oh, my God.
That was awesome. But yeah. He left about halfway through for me, and then Rick Romer is now gone. So pretty much all of the people
Rick
that
went
I studied
there. I
with.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now he's up in New York.
Well, let's all meet back up in New York. Michael, have you done a musical on Broadway?
I have not officially.
If you were to do one,
oh gosh,
what one would you want to do?
If I was going to direct a musical on Broadway today,
the next revival of fill in the blank,
Sweeney Todd, yeah,
it's the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah,
what would be your take on it? Would you have the sound?
We would have a huge orchestra. I can tell you that. I love that score.
Any particular, because we might be hearing it behind us right now, if you told us what your particular favorite part of that show was.
Ooh, maybe we could do the quartet.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Hear it?
Hear it.
Hear it.
It's
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us backstage.
Oh, it wait. Is. Let's listen a little more.
He's feeling her, Joanna.
Man, that's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like four.
Yeah.
Just good.
It's just good.
Just great.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
Thank you.
Bye.